Welcome to the Round 10 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined, as per usual, by FB Donkey.
And here with a big smile on my face, mate.
Gosh. You did exceptionally well this weekend, and as much as I hate to see you blitz so far ahead of me, it's nice that you've made such big inroads toward that top 1,000. So I'll let you jump straight into your score update for the week, mate. How'd you go?
24.50 this week, so... backed up another big score. I've gone from 7,300 2 weeks ago to 777th. So, woo, cracked top 1,000.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, I've risen pretty quickly. I'm sure I could fall just as quickly, depending on how things go. Pretty awesome to get that result, though, with Boyd, Adams, Ablett, Hall, Barlow, and Wells all sitting on the pine. So, yeah, I guess I just avoided the crappy rookie scores and brought Pritis in this week, who did okay. DeGoey's starting to find a little bit of form finally, and Matty D, 126. I know a few weeks ago he had two poor scores in a row and his break even was pretty high for his price, and I think it was even in the 90s, and probably just pure luck kept him, and it's worked out the last 2 weeks, but pretty happy with that, and hopefully I can stay in the top 1,000 for a bit longer, mate. How did you go?
Not quite as well as you did, mate, but again, I had quite a few unique players performing poorly, and so considering that, I'm reasonably happy with my rank, not falling too badly. So 22.40 this week, wussed out and went with Pritis as a captain. Anyone who puts Pritis on the captain, you're not taking much risk, and in a week where Goldstein scores 170 and Heath Shaw scores 203, you really rue those missed chances.
Who do you have your vice-captain on?
I had it on Danger, and I saw Hannabry come in at 110, so I thought, let's go for something safe this week. I'll go for Pritis. Goldstein was my next option, and I have to admit losing a little bit of faith in him and worrying about his consistency, which was probably the wrong time to worry about that with Cruiser out for Carlton.
He was playing against Gorringe.
Uh-huh.
When he was playing for the Gold Coast, he wasn't even playing as a ruckman. He was playing as like a tall wingman.
Thanks for rubbing more salt into the wounds. You should have been telling me this on a bloody Saturday, Mark. Yeah, not super on the captaincy front. And I had Ollie Wine score 71, Joel Selwood 72, Green 82, which is fine, but not super, Menzel 52, McVeigh 70, just a lot of underperforming premiums, and so I can't complain too much about the score. Like, if I put Goldstein as a captain, I probably would have stayed or moved up a little bit. So I dropped down 500 spots to 5,120th. And I think, considering it's been a couple weeks now of the team stalling and not falling too far behind, I have some confidence that when things eventually do turn around, the team can move its way up a little bit. Staying hopeful, Mark. Hopefully I can repeat your efforts and storm into the top 1,000 in a couple of weeks. That'd be quite nice.
Well, the Cats do have Carlton this week, so given how cat heavy your team is, you might be able to get a little bit of a bounce.
Yeah. All right, so this week the main topics for discussion are Jacob Hopper and Bailey Williams, the two rookies on the bubble. And then because we've actually talked about a fair amount of premiums over the last few weeks, this week we thought we'd turn our attention to buy strategy. So the buys are coming up in now only three rounds time, Mark. It's really quite soon. And that means that even the rookies that we'll be selecting will not mature potentially in time to be traded out before the buys come into play. So we turn our attention to that this week, and we'll spend a bit more time delving into some general strategy. So a bit of a different one compared to our last few. So I hope it holds you in good stead. So anyone looking for specific player advice, you can always refer back to our last few shows, Mark. I think most of the time we're fairly consistent in how we view players, and it doesn't tend to change too drastically from week to week. So,
and we have covered a lot of the premiums and falling premiums in the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm. And we will cap off the show mentioning a couple of underperforming and potential value premiums as well. So anyway, as we do each week, we'll go through a quick group update. So the top score this week was 25.04, and that was by Andrew's team, Fig Jam SA. So congratulations to you, Andrew. That moved you up nearly into the top 1,000 at 1.078. I think you came top 3 last week with a massive score, and this week you were still only 17th in our group. So we had quite a few people smashing the scores this week. So congratulations to everyone in our community. Hopefully most of you had pretty decent weeks. And I think our league's moving upward, Mark, probably is a bit indicative of that as well. So Supercoach Coach number one, that's our number one ranked league, moved from 13th last week to 10th this week. So in the top 10. And Supercoach Coach QQ or Queens, they moved into 12th. So moved into the top 20 this week, all the way to 12th. And hopefully they continue pushing forward. We like to see ourselves right at the top of that pointy end of that ladder, don't we, Mark?
Yeah, we do, mate. There's been a lot of bouncing in rankings for leagues, like leagues going from 10th to 30th. So I think that they're still consolidating there. And one big factor seems to be the rucks. Like some leagues seem to be, and some teams seem to be so Gorn reliant. Like I think the fact that I've done well the last 2 weeks has been a lot because Gorn hasn't done well.
Yeah, when he was busting out 160s every odd week, that was very, very hard to deal with. And 2 weeks in a row, he's come crashing back to earth. So just goes to show you, you've got to hold your nerve sometimes in this game. And I'm sure for Gorn owners, things will turn around as well, and he'll return to some pretty high scoring. So just a plug, Facebook and Twitter, you can find us there for questions every Tuesday. And we're on patreon.com/supercoachcoach. Thank you to those of you who continue to sign up and support the show and support the running costs. We really appreciate it. We'll move on to the questions now, and the first one for the week is from Shane Medcalf. Do we keep McPherson? So Darcy McPherson, he's gone up 52,000, but he got injured during the game, Mark, at 155,000, and with the buys on the horizon, what do you reckon?
Very unlucky, very difficult spot to be in. I mean, the problem is that if you're trading him out, you're not making any money for it, so it's not helping you do an upgrade, but then it is giving you better money-making potential in your team. Look, I think that you probably just should be maybe trading him around the buyers. I hope that there's a good rookie around then, because I think it just stalls your upgrades too much if you'd be trading him this week. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think that's a good call, Mark. Wait till you have the triple trade opportunity and use that opportunity to move him out. Having said that, if you had a lot of cash in bank from a couple double downs, would you use this opportunity to splash a bit more cash and take somebody at 150K like McPherson all the way up to a premium?
That's such a gross move. So in the past, those sort of trades haven't really worked for me because you've done two trades to get the money and then one trade for the upgrade. So it's really costing you three trades for an upgrade normally in that situation, which you can't be doing three trades for every upgrade. So I really hate fully upgrading these basement guys as well.
It is a medium long-term injury for McPherson, I think. PCL or something like that, knee injury.
I don't think that we've had the final tests yet back as of yet, but yeah, I'd be very surprised if he was back this year.
So for people who are looking at potentially downgrading this week, the first one, obviously, that we flagged last week is Jacob Hopper. So Luke Hicks has asked about him. He'd like to hear our thoughts on Hopper, considering his massive price tag, which we already flagged last week. 74, Mark, was around the mark of the score I wanted to see from Hopper as a minimum. I think you potentially were slightly higher, around 80, but it's fairly close, Mark. So I assume you're fairly on the line with him at the moment.
Yeah, look, I am, and I think it's very, very team-specific because it depends, is he going to be on your field, and does that trade give you enough money? It looks like there's potentially a couple of other midfield rookies coming through over the next month or so, so you're going to end up, if you're downgrading to them as well, are you going to get stuck with too many midfield rookies? So I think that it is pretty team-specific, but I think it was probably the bottom of what I was expecting or hoping for, and thinking that I might bring him in just because he was right down on the GWS scoring, whether 74 is a good score or not. And as far as midfield players or flank players for the Giants go, it was a very poor score. Yeah, I'm certainly not overly enthusiastic about picking him, but I can understand why he might suit some teams. And is he in your potential plans?
He certainly is, and I think the fact that I have more money in bank makes it a little bit easier. If I downgrade from a 250, 300K rookie to a 200K rookie, it's not the end of the world. I have more than enough cash to upgrade. So I think you're right, Mark. It is team and maybe a bit cash in bank specific as well. his run may prove a bit challenging. I mean, they have Adelaide, Geelong and Sydney in the next three, who are all finals contenders. But after that, they do have Essendon in round 13, followed by Carlton in round 14, which are great two games to be finishing off your pre-bye run. And of course, that means that he has a round 15 bye, which is absolutely great for bringing a rookie, because that's five prize movements before his bye instead of just the three if he was in a round 13 bye.
Yep, and I think he's got the lowest break-even going into this week. Look, I think my main concern really is probably around job security. Had Jack Steele go back to the reserves, had 43 touches. Tomlinson had another 50-odd possessions. Like, there's a reasonable amount of pressure on that position at the Giants, and he's going to need to keep performing. And the Giants also have a fairly strong history of resting their rookies. So, yeah, look, I think there are some concerns there at 196,000, but like you said, he will fit some teams.
All right, so we have another follow-up question from BWarrell28 on Twitter. Did you see enough from Beast Mode to ignore Hopper? Hopper seemed to play a bit more forward this week. So by Beast Mode, Boz means Reese Matheson, who we flagged previously. He was talked up quite a bit by Leper as the rookie that most deserves a spot at the start of the season in the Lions' best 22 at 117,000 and off his fresh debut game of 59. Would you be more tempted to hold off now that you've seen Beast Mode play?
Yes, and I think that that's definitely influencing my decision on Hopper. Matheson didn't actually score that much, but from what I saw, he looked really, really good. I was super impressed by him. Really puts his head over the ball. I think my biggest concern is what he already broke a cheekbone or a jaw or something in the preseason, that he would just do that again, because he just keeps putting his head down. And I think he had five free kicks for high tackles on the weekend in his debut, which was three more than anyone else on the weekend. So, look, I definitely saw enough from Matheson, and he is very much in my plans, and even potentially someone I would take this week if I needed the extra money. Like, if I wanted to do a downgrade and upgrade and I want to include Parrish, Hopper probably doesn't give me enough money, so I may need to go a week early on Matheson.
Another positive point about Matheson, and a big reason why we'd consider bringing him in, is, again, the round 15 bye. And even though he's not on the bubble this week, he will have four price movements before his bye, which tends to be probably the minimum mark you'd want to see before trading a rookie out, is about four price movements.
That is, but I'm actually... We'll get to this later, but it's not a huge consideration for me with someone like Matheson, because there's a good chance that Matheson is someone I would keep for the rest of the year if I traded him in.
Right. And they've got Hawthorn, Carlton, Frio, West Coast and Richmond is their next five for anyone who's interested. But certainly I'm considering very seriously holding on Hopper this week because of Reese as well, Mark, and because of one more bloke who we have a question about. And this one's from at Just the Five on Twitter. Is Williams worth getting with a view to place him at M10 eventually? So is a back mid rookie from the Bulldogs. What are your thoughts on him? Do you like that back mid flexibility at this point in the season?
I don't think it adds a heap to my team, because I only have at the moment Bartel and Rich that actually have the back mid flexibility as well. And if I was going to bring him in, it'd probably be to my back line. I brought Brand in last week to my back line, so I'm not really keen on a Williams Brand backup, because you do get a lot of defensive injuries, and both of those guys seem to have like reasonably shaky job security. I know that Beveridge has said that Williams will play this week, which is awesome for him. I guess I look at someone like Bailey Dale last year, who they gave 10 games to, so they gave him a bunch of games. But is 10 games really what I'm looking for out of a rookie? Like, Bailey Dale didn't play the last 4 weeks, and if Williams was in that sort of situation, it would be tricky. I know the Bulldogs have said Boyd and Suckling probably come back this week as well. So I guess it's really Williams and Adcock fighting it out for a position. And when it comes down to preparing a team for the finals, I think that they'd want Adcock in that spot personally. But look, I can see why people are bringing him in. He's a bit of a gamble, though. I guess all rookies are a gamble, but I see him as probably slightly too much of a gamble.
Job security is very crucial when considering rookie ins at this point in the season, because if you're bringing in a player that's going to miss through the bye period, that can seriously cost a fair bit of points. Not to say Bailey Williams is necessarily going to smash it during the bye period anyway, but certainly in the past, I've brought in rookies with sort of more questionable job security pre-buys without really thinking about the consequences if they get dropped. And when they did, it really screwed up a lot of my buy calculations in terms of player availability. So that is something to consider fairly heavily. So at this point in time, Mark, will you be downgrading this week? And if so, to who?
At this point in time, I will be downgrading this week because I want to keep my one down, one up strategy going. And it's really a flip between Matheson and Hopper at this stage, probably leaning towards Matheson because I need the funds.
Personally, for me, I think, to be honest, I'm sitting on Williams at the moment. Probably will get scared off him as the week drags on. But you know me, Mark, I get sucked into the MPPs a little bit. And I think that having a backline rookie that I can trade into my midfield and then flip back into my backline when I want to trade a Ruggles out or Tipping Woody out later on could be fairly handy. So that's what I'm looking at the moment.
Yeah, I think that you really have to make an assessment on the player and probably not rely too much on the dual position status just because of those factors that you mentioned about the buys. Yeah. And Bailey Williams could definitely work out. You've definitely seen rookies that are similar to his profile that have worked out in the past. But yeah, I think you really need to be assessing the players and working out what you think their job security is.
I've been guilty of falling into these sort of traps before. So like I said, I'll probably move off it as we go on.
I just wanted to flag that there's probably a few more rookies coming up too as well. You've got Alex Pierce is going to need to be replaced at Fremantle. Sam Collins is a favourite for that spot at the moment. You've got Jack Trengrove has considered himself or declared himself fit to play seniors. So he'll get a game at some stage. There are a few going to be coming through. I think Jakey Long for the Bombers might debut this weekend, but probably won't score too highly.
All right, so moving on to some more general strategic questions, Mark, and some buy talk, and we've already started the buy talk so far this episode, but the question here is from Brent Jenkins, and is now the time to start preparing for buy rounds? What do you reckon, Mark, in terms of buy planning? Now, especially with rookie trade-ins potentially not reaching price maturity before the buys, it's certainly come to the forefront of my mind. But beyond that, we haven't talked very much about trading specifically for buy-friendly players so far this season. Yeah. We haven't talked much about it when we're considering the trade-in targets. Have you started to look at your buy structure, your buy breakdown, and who you're actually bringing into your team?
Yeah, I probably have over the last 3 or 4 weeks just at least check just to make sure the how each premium that I bring in is going to affect my structure, so I'm just not overloading in any one position too much. And the reason why I don't consider the rookies maturing to be too important this year is that I'm actually approaching the buys in a very, very different way this year because they're later. So I think last year the buys started like about round 10 or maybe around 11, so we'd almost be up to that stage, and so it'd be very much in upgrade season. But this time I'm seeing the buys, like I'm seeing my team almost upgraded before the buys. Going into round 12, I should have maybe 2, maybe 3 spots still to upgrade, so that might be a spot where I slow down a little bit. I think if you're waiting for the buys this year to do your upgrades, then that may work in a league situation where you might get a few extra wins by doing a lot of trades in that period. And if your team's doing okay, it sort of sets it up for later in the year. But I think for an overall strategy, you're leaving it way too late. And if you're looking to upgrade a rookie to a premium in round 15 as an upgrade, you've only got like 8 rounds left after that. Whereas if you get that in sort of round 12, you've got 11 rounds left. So I think there's a really, really big difference. If you delay it, you're just leaving it a little bit too late this year. So I'm hoping to use absolutely minimal trades around the buys. I don't know what that number probably looks like at the moment, maybe in the 4 or 5 range, whereas in the past I've been a max trader over the buys.
So we do have a question here from Shannon Swan that is in around that ballpark. If there's still growth in your rookies, should you be waiting and sitting on your trades, or should you be looking to continue downgrading and upgrading at all costs at this time of year? So I'm guessing by what you've just said, Mark, you do not think that it's a good strategy if you're chasing the overall to slow down your upgrades and hold off until that buy period.
No, I don't think that it's a good idea to do that this year just because they are so late. And I think that, like some people are talking about, you can save trades. If it's you're saving a trade for an upgrade, it's just saving a trade that you're going to be using later anyway. You're not actually saving a trade. You're just delaying a trade, which is quite different. So, look, I think that you should not be downgrading, upgrading at all costs. If you have a Kerridge who has a break-even that's lower than his average, he still has a little bit of money to make. But based on the scoring he's shown this year, I don't think he has a lot of money to make. So there comes a point where you don't just wait for them to eke out every cent. You can trade them before they reach their fully max price, and that's okay.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I think that I'm not looking to complete my team as such, but I'm certainly not looking to hold off on upgrades or to upgrade throughout the buy period as I did last year. Instead, I think what I'll probably do and the furthest I'll take it is to probably still load up on cash pre-buys. So that's after round 12, pre-round 13. And then after round 13, finish all my last upgrades. So that's hitting up those round 13 buy players after they've come off the buy as my final upgrade. So that's probably the latest I'd delay those trades is that first week of buys. And I probably will look to leave maybe two premium upgrades till that point, but that's probably as far as I'd take that.
Yep, I definitely agree with that.
Based off that, then, we've got a question here from Moosey, wondering whether you have any ideas in regards to the number of trades you're looking to use throughout the buys or perhaps have after the buys. If you're not planning to trade very much post this upgrade period, then I'm guessing you must have a rough number in your head of how many trades you'd like to hold for injuries and long-term issues.
I think my calculations say that I would come out of the buys with maybe 8 to 10 trades, and I think that'd be a trade around from then on. And that, I think that'd be very happy with that. I think if you come out with 5 or 6, you could manage as long as you can just get through a couple of rounds without trading at all. But yeah, I wouldn't want to be getting any lower than that.
So far we've been talking mostly around upgrade strategy in terms of velocity, whether or not we'd stop ourselves or pace ourselves leading into the buy or just continue full steam ahead. But in terms of the actual trade-in targets, Mark, do you have specific strategies around that? I know personally, I've listed my premiums out into round 13, 14, and 15 buys and then sort of looked at where the holes are. So for example, I don't have any round 14 premium forwards. So a player like Luke Dalhouse, for example, or Zaki Merritt is all of a sudden a lot more attractive for my final forward upgrades than a round 15 player, for example.
Yep, I don't have any round 14 premium forwards either. The Supercoach Gold aspect of the buys is fantastic. Like, you just can click on it and it hovers over your team and it shows you exactly which players are going to be missing in each round. So, I've just been using that and trying to get a decent balance across the team. I don't think that I'm going to get it perfect. And I think that this year, probably the reason why we haven't discussed the buys so much on the podcast is that you can get way caught up in making it have too big an impact on your team, and you need to think about it and you need to consider it and you need to minimize the disadvantage you experience over the buys. But if it makes you compromise which premiums you take too often, then that can start being a problem for your team and you sort of end up regretting your picks.
In other words, what you're saying is if you compromise on your selection too much to gain points in the short term during the buy period, if you've made too compromised a selection, you'd lose all that advantage through, you know, points leakage as compared to the ideal or the superior pick over the course of the remaining 8 rounds of the season.
Absolutely. And that happened. That occurs for both premiums and rookies.
Yeah, and I definitely have found that to be true in the past, not just of myself, but of our community. I think we've tackled the buys really well, but sometimes maybe a bit at the expense of the long term sometimes. But I certainly think it's still a smart strategy to try and mitigate it as best you can without making compromise decisions. If you're deciding between even Dalhouse and Martin, if you see them both as 105 type players, then pick the guy that works best for your buy structure. But if you're comparing somebody like Martin to perhaps a key position forward, then all of a sudden things become a little bit sketchier. You know, even though Jared Waite is averaging, 109 for the season, trading him in ahead of a midfield forward because of buy structure may be short-sighted. It could be one example.
Yep.
All right, so last questions for the week are related to some underperforming premiums. So the first one that we have a question about is from at Greeny on Twitter. Is Stefan Martin tradable if Trent West stays in the team? So we've said no to trading out Martin for a little while and he scored 48 in the round 9. So price is now dropped to 458,000 and with Todd Goldstein scoring a 173 and sort of bottoming out after that 49 in round 6, a lot of people have their eyes on a Martin to Goldstein trade. Is that blasphemous or would you actually consider that, Mark?
I think my advice is if you have Stefan Martin and you already have Goldstein, then you're best off just upgrading the rest of your team and hoping that Martin comes good. Because really you're side-swapping premiums this late in the season, which is stalling other upgrades in your team. And the difference between a rookie and a premium is probably bigger than the difference between Martin and a premium from here on. not in the last 9 weeks, but from here on. If you don't have Goldstein, I very much urge you to do Martin to Goldstein this week. Goldstein is potentially on his way out of here as far as price goes. Martin is just getting worse and stalling, and I think that Goldstein is an essential player to have in your team. So Martin obviously suffering from that bump. If Trent West keeps playing, that is terrible for Martin's scoring, which we've seen in the past when Leuenberger played there. It's really not good for Steph to be playing as a dual ruckman. I guess like Paddy Ryder suffers a bit like that, but Paddy's a lot better forward, obviously. But yeah, Goldstein, I would definitely bring him in.
Yeah, I agree with that. I wouldn't trade him out to anybody but Goldstein, but if you didn't have Goldstein, like we talked in the preseason, he potentially is that much further ahead than the next best ruck that it's too much points missing out on a player like that. So next question about Barlow, Mark. I think Barlow was 40-something touches. It was absolutely insane in the waffle.
200 Supercoach points.
Mm. So Paul Maltman's asking, how many of those 200 points will he be getting? And if he's not named, is it time for him to finally get the flick?
If he's not named this week, then AFL House should go and knock on Ross Lyon's door and say, hey, mate, you owe us money because you are clearly tanking.
Faz has said that since round three, so.
And the Bombers see it more than anyone because we thought we had number one pick locked up this year, and Freo doing everything they can to not win a game at the moment. I'm heading over to Perth in a few weeks to watch Essendon play West Coast. Unfortunately, we played the Dockers a couple weeks earlier. I'd much prefer to go to that one, but I'll be there for the Eagles game. Mundy's potentially not playing this week with another calf injury. I can't see why Barlow wouldn't get picked this week, but then it was pissing down with rain last week and they knew that. Like, he should have been picked last week. It's not that he's in bad form. I can't get a read on Ross Lyon. Surely he comes in at some stage. Yeah, I don't know what to do. I just keep hoping that reality is going to kick in and he has to come back in.
Yeah, I also keeping that hope. I think if he's not named, I would be fairly tempted to move him on. He is, I think, 28, turning 29 this year, and Ross is certainly looking forward to the future with some of the talk that's coming out of his mouth. I mean, in terms of Ross rhetoric, it's about as close to rebuild talk as you're going to get out of him. Yeah, that has me a little bit nervous. If he doesn't see him in his long-term midfield plans, even if he comes back to the team, he might not be playing as a midfielder. Like, Mundy plays as a third tall defender, maybe Barlow will just play as a forward. And in the Freo team, that isn't necessarily a superb role to be playing, as we've seen in patches from Barlow so far. So if he's not named after two amazing performances, I would seriously consider trading him. Next question is from at Jam Hawkins. What should we do with big bad Aaron Hall? Hasn't scored over 100 since round 4, and Gold Coast don't seem like they're doing so well anymore. He missed the last game as well. 482,000 he's currently priced at. I'm assuming it's a definite hold, but we're not happy about it.
Yeah, and look, I think that just because of the style that Aaron Hall plays, he's probably going to do a lot better in wins than he would losses. And Gold Coast are just completely falling apart with their injury lists. But look, I'm sure that you have bigger concerns in your team than Aaron Hall.
It's only when you have Aaron Hall, Barlow, Wells, and Ablett all out at the same time that it really hurts. So hopefully a few of them come back into the team this week and we won't be looking so seriously at trading these blokes out.
News on that front has been pretty good early in the week that Hall and Ablett should be back. Wells is close to being a certain starter on Friday night, and who knows with Ross Lyon and Barlow, but you couldn't do any more to put your name up in lights, could you?
I wouldn't think so, Mark. All right, so we'll keep our fingers crossed, and we're just hoping for good things. And hopefully it works out for you guys as well. Last two questions are with regards to Port Adelaide trade-in targets. So the first one is Chad Wingard, 381,000, scored 107 on the weekend and has bottomed out now, break even of 58 at the moment. And the other one's Robbie Gray, who you don't have to get this week. He's still bottoming out. He has a 53 still in his price movements for one more round. Currently priced at 514,000 with a break even of 135, and we know the bloke can average 110 basically when he stays injury free.
Yeah, look, I think that Wingard from this time last year averaged over 100. I think he kicked 3 goals like every game pretty much for the rest of the year, and he actually finally looked like the proper Wingard, although he missed one shocking kick from the point post where he just gave it completely to the opposition. And look, I'm really concerned that Port looks shit, and therefore a small forward playing for Port might not do as well as you would hope, and there's heaps of really good forward options this year. Robbie Gray very much interests me. He's had 2 down games. Every other game's been about 120. Again, the Port factor worries me. The fact that he stands out so much in their midfield this year worries me a little bit, because he might get some attention at some stage. But at his price, I think he's someone you should very strongly consider be bringing in this week or next. If he scores what you're hoping he's going to score, he's not going to lose a heap of money this week.
Hopefully, too, they start winning some games. I mean, they have Melbourne, Collingwood, Western Bulldogs, and Fremantle up to the bye. So, could be reasonably challenging, but there could be some potentially, you know, 3, maybe even 4 wins there if they can start turning things around. So, they only went down by 8 points to the West Coast Eagles. And if they hit some form, you know, it certainly will help both of those players out a lot. Unfortunately, Gray does spend a bit of time up forward, so he definitely does score better when Port are winning games as compared to losing. One nice thing to note is Wingard is a round 14 buy player, and we just mentioned neither of us have a round 14 buy premium forward at the moment, Mark. So, you know, at 380k, it's almost a, you know, a freebie at that price.
I got plenty of round 13 forward premium.
So, you know, could sideswap one of those.
That's the worst round to be sideswapping.
Yeah, potential trading targets. Now that I'm actually looking at Wingard being around 14 by play, I'm getting quite tempted. But then again, Mark, it comes back to that conversation we had before. Do you take a riskier play that fits your buy structure, or do you just pick the play that you think will be in the top 6 forwards? Because unfortunately, I don't really see Wingard being a top 6 forward.
But, like, what's he worth? Like 400,000 or something now? I think that at 400,000, he doesn't have to be a top 6 forward. Like, you could get so many points for the price that it makes up for the fact that you don't have the perfect team. If you could average 97 from here, you're getting such a massive discount that it'd sort of work out okay, I think.
Yeah.
But that, there's a lot of ifs in that.
All right, Mark. So that wraps up this week's show. A little bit of a different one. We spent a lot of time talking about strategy. Just to round things out again, still sitting on Matheson at the moment?
Talking a bit more about buys and looking to my team a little bit more, I could really use with a round 15 midfielder rookie. So I might be looking at Hopper and Matheson over the next couple of weeks, just because Dangerfield's my only round 15 midfielder at the moment.
Ah, okay. All right. I've got Selwood. You can hide a Wells or a Barlow up in your midfield as well, potentially. But definitely there's slots there for round 15 buy players. So so maybe we'll see Hopper in your team, Mark.
Yeah, they're the two that I'm strongly considering this week.
All right.
And I'm probably very strongly looking at Robbie Gray as well.
I think I'm probably looking more at Wingard than Gray this week, but definitely Gray will be very high on my radar next week. If I didn't have bloody Wines in my team, I'd probably be considering him even more seriously.
Wines has been atrocious.
Oh, God.
To think in the preseason we were talking Wines versus Parker and thought that that was a close call.
That seems almost stupid now. God.
Really tough.
Oh, well. We were expecting a lot more from Port Adelaide, so yeah. Anyway, that wraps up this week's show, Mark. All the best for this week. I mean, now that you're in the top 1,000, I hope you don't accelerate too much in front of me.
No, but at least if I can get into the top 500, everyone just consolidates behind me and we're
all right. All right. All the best to your team this week, Mark. Geelong have Carlton, so at least I should have something to look forward to in the football sphere. And I think you got Dreamtime, Mark, this week.
Yeah, Dreamtime. We'll be heading to the game on Saturday night. I don't expect to win. Richmond showing a bit of form, but it's always a good game to go to.
Mm. All right, mate. Enjoy, and I'll catch you next week. See ya.
See ya.
Let's get crazy.